Imagine a man who not only laughed at death, but at the death of hundreds of millions of people. Herman Kahn, a real-life Dr. Strangelove, was just such a man. His book, called On Thermonuclear War, was a manifesto for surviving a nuclear attack. But it was also, well, funny. Sharon Gamari Tabrizi explores one of the Cold War's most controversial figures in her book called The Worlds of Herman Kahn. Steve Paulson spoke with her about Kahn's grotesque approach to dealing with the unthinkable.
Well, the grotesque has a lot of different meanings, but one of them is a feeling that two things are presented together that don't properly belong together, so that people have a feeling that jokes about nuclear war are simply wrong. They're offensive. They're improper. And anything in which you have a feeling that it's a formal category mistake to put these two things together presents a feeling of anxiety and uneasiness, or creates those feelings in people. That's what the grotesque does. And he was a teller of grotesque jokes
about nuclear war. Tell me one or two of his jokes about nuclear war.
He really was pretty funny about nuclear war. He had a few one-liners. He would, in talking about the post-war world and worries about genetic mutations, which would create what they called in the period mutants, monsters of one sort or another due to radiation exposure, he would say things like, "It's possible that parents could learn to love their two-headed children twice as much." You know, and his audience would be completely dumbfounded.
If you knew a woman, say, who had lost her only child, she was grieving, and you walked up to her and said, "Madam, I know the world looks black to you. I know you can't vision a life in the future anymore. Nevertheless, in 5 years, you will have recovered from this loss." Everybody will be mad at you. I mean, they will feel, what right do you have to walk up to her and say something like that? In the business I'm in, where you have to talk about preparing for this post-war life, post-war world, it's important to notice that that's the situation. By and large, normal human beings have a limited capacity for grief. You might mourn a loved one for a year. If 20 times many people die, doesn't mean you mourn for 20 years.
He's talking about how many millions of people would it be acceptable to kill in a thermonuclear war. And so he says, "It may be too much to promise to kill every Soviet citizen if they act up. I admit it may be too ambitious a program, but you know it's too ambitious to promise to kill all the Indians too. They just feel neutral."
Wow.
And he would laugh.
And it's worth pointing out that he was saying these things really at the height of the Cold War. I mean, at the height of all the hysteria about nuclear war. I mean, people were really afraid about nuclear weapons going off.
But it was also within the context that he was saying, look, we're threatening to use these weapons and we're concerned about a surprise attack, but nobody, including anybody in the Defense Department, had an actual plan of, number one, what do you do after the bombs go off? How do you actually fight a war? How do you importantly terminate a war? And how do you think the world's going to look like after the war ends? And here's one of his most famous jokes. He was giving a critique of the strategic policy of the period, which was called massive retaliation, which says we're going to use everything. And he and other members of critical strategic defense community were saying, no, you should hold back some of your offensive forces in reserve. And he said in a briefing to SAC officers, the strategic command officers, in a sense, you people don't have war plans. You've got wargasms. And it completely freaked everybody out. They just didn't know what to say.
And wasn't Herman Kahn pretty upfront about talking about how to survive a nuclear war? I mean, a war where tens of millions of people would die. I mean, he had a scenario laid out on what to do in that situation.
Well, if it's only 50 million dead, and I say only in the sense that 50 million is less than 180 million, then you have just stated 130 million are alive. And to say that this is optimistic is, to me, not an optimistic statement, but simply a result of our studies. I think the point is people just find it almost impossible, or immoral, as a matter of fact, to distinguish, say, between 50 million dead and 180 million dead.
Doesn't this philosophy figure prominently in Dr. Strangelove?
Absolutely. There's a real connection between Herman Kahn and Kubrick.
Mr. President, We are rapidly approaching a moment of truth, both for ourselves as human beings and for the life of our nation. Now, truth is not always a pleasant thing. But it is necessary now to make a choice, to choose between two admittedly regrettable, but nevertheless distinguishable post-war environments. One where you got 20 million people killed, and the other where you got 150 million people killed.
You're talking about mass murder, General, not war.
Mr. President, I'm not saying we wouldn't get our hair mussed, but I do say no more than 10 to 20 million killed, tops, depending on the breaks.
Now, wasn't Kahn's book on thermonuclear war actually a book of the month club? I mean, wasn't this something that had a big following among the general public?
Yes, it did. It absolutely did. And it was offered as a premium for the history book club. And it was probably one of the few books on nuclear strategy that was read by people who weren't that interested in the sort of details of nuclear strategy. And my feeling is because it's such a complicated book, it's an interesting book to read as science fiction in a certain way, precisely because you're zooming through World War VIII and World War I and a post-war world and all these little scenarios.
Mr. President, I would not rule out the chance to preserve a nucleus of human specimens. It will be quite easy. At the bottom of some of our deeper mine shafts, radioactivity would never penetrate a mine some thousands of feet deep. And in a matter of weeks, sufficient improvements in dwelling space could easily be provided.
How long would you have to stay down there?
Well, let's see now. Radioactive half-life of... I would think that possibly 100 years.
This is the mineshaft scenario in Dr. Strangelove. What he was arguing was several things. Number one, if there wasn't a civil defense program, then there would be 100 million dead. But if there had been a civil defense program and people had shelters and those shelters were stocked, there would only be 20 million dead. What they both said is you can't talk openly about something that is unspeakable. That was part of the reason why the grotesque is such an interesting form of speech, because it's so vulgar, it's so shocking, that once you break into speech, once you make jokes about things you ought not to make jokes about, you invite candor from everyone. It kind of clears space for horror, and you know, all of that intense psychic energy gets expressed, and you make a little bit of room for discussion. Certainly Kahn felt that way, and Kubrick felt that way.
So that's why Dr. Strangelove is full of black humor.
Absolutely, and Kubrick uses, you know, verbatim passages from Herman Kahn's book in the screenplay of the film. And when Kahn wrote, the actual quotations are actually not meant to be funny, but within the context of Dr. Strangelove, they're hilarious.
Well, you know, we've been joking about Herman Kahn, but he actually had enormous influence in America, didn't he? I mean, particularly in the late 50s and the 60s and at the highest levels of government.
Well, I mean, yes and no. He was a really controversial figure. And he was asked to give a series of lectures in the middle 50s on systems analysis, which was a new methodology, to the Air Force. And to his surprise, it was an enormous success. He cracked up his audiences, and it kind of came to him, wow, this is something that I can do. And he had this wonderful joke-telling ability, so it was a kind of natural. He did these national briefings and started talking about civil defense in terms of sick jokes. Both what he said and how he said it were both extraordinarily new and very controversial. But what he absolutely did do is sort of flag everybody's attention by saying it the way he said and insisting on saying what he said.
Now, Herman Kahn was clearly a product of the Cold War, and we are now living in the age of the War on Terror, and arguably there is an even greater threat of nuclear weapons now. Do we need another Herman Kahn?
Oh, I think we have a Herman Kahn in Donald Rumsfeld. I mean, the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence, could have come from Herman Kahn's lips, meaning that if Donald Rumsfeld wants to posit that if I think something should be there and it fails to be there, then that must be proof of deception and concealment on the part of the bad guy.
Target in sight.
What kind of world would you have to live in order to take the absence of something to be confirmable proof of something?
Sharon Gamari Tabrizi is the author of The Worlds of Herman Kahn, The Intuitive Science of Thermonuclear War. Steve Paulson spoke with her.
Nuclear war, yeah.